Thank you for coming, and I'm grateful to the organizer for the opportunity of spending time with you and of telling you about this project I'm developing, which I think has several interest opportunity for many of you. What I will talk about is not directly related to KPZ, although I suspect that many of you will see the connections, and those who don't, probably I hope that they will enjoy the seminar for its content. And what I will try to convince you is some idea that you might find radical, that namely that the eigenvectors of a random matrix can depend on the statistics of the eigenvalue, and that two are do not decouple so simply as we are expecting. And this means that essentially that the UN, the rotational symmetry that matrix models are naturally endowed with, can be spontaneously broken by non-trivial eigenvalue statistics. This idea might make some of you uncomfortable, so please hold your horses and ask questions a bit later on as I try to convince you. But similar ideas have been introduced before, and this essentially three papers have been my motivation to go into this direction. And one last word of advice before I go to explain exactly what I mean is that if this is a spontaneous symmetry breaking, this is different compared to the ones that we are usually taught in undergraduates in physics, because the thermodynamic limit that one needs to see the spontaneous breaking of a symmetry also takes the rank of the symmetry that is being broken to infinity. So this is what makes it different and probably interesting. So I will start with some motivation and some introduction that comes from the Anderson model. I'm grateful to Miguel, who last week introduced us the Anderson model quite in detail, but I will still remind something for the people who were not here last week. And then I will explain exactly how this spontaneous symmetry breaking came about with three different point of view, and then I'll go to the most interesting aspect of this work, which is still in progress, related to some peculiar matrix models which defy the Wigner-Dyson universality class. So let me start with some introduction on localization. So everything started with this Hamiltonian by Anderson in 58. It is a tight binding model, so a model of electrons on a lattice which can hop on nearest neighbor. I'll just restrict myself to nearest neighbor for a while. So this means that I destroy an electron on one side and I create it on a neighboring one and vice versa. And Anderson asked the questions. We know that if the lattice is regular, this model is a very good conductor from Bloch theorem. But what happened in reality, we know that regular lattices do not exist. In reality, most lattices are disorders. So what happens if instead there is some disorder at a quantum level? And he thought of modeling this disorder by just placing some random potential on top of this lattice, which he mimics from some random on-site energy that the electron feels when it sits on one of the lattices. And he just took these energies uniformly sampled from some distribution that with characteristic width W. And as we learned last week, in one and two dimension, any disorder is sufficient to localize the wave function, which might be a statement that we might be comfortable with. But in higher dimension, I think things become quite intriguing. So the statement is that in dimension higher than two, for small disorder, the system remains conducting. While you reach a critical value of the disorder, the system becomes insulating. But this happens in quite a peculiar way, because as you introduce the disorder, there is a new length scale, which is called the mobility edge, that emerges, that starts from infinity and goes down as you increase the disorder, that separates energy bands in which the wave function are extended from one in which the wave function are localized. And this, I think, is what makes the problem strange from our naive expectation, because you see that the high energy wave function become localized, which is counterintuitive from a classical mechanics perspective, because you expect that as you increase the energy, the corrugation of the potential will be less relevant. Instead, because of the quantum interference effect, what happens is that at high energy, instead, the system becomes more localized. And to understand all this, you actually need some advanced tools, because a straightforward analysis based on perturbation theory is not self-consistent, although it works in a way. And so this is intrinsically a hard problem, because it is a problem that really goes at the core of collective quantum mechanics. But I mean, we heard last week that there are some unsolved problems, but we have a good understanding of what happens in the localized and extended regime. What instead is still an open problem is what happened in the intermediate regime. So what happened at the mobility edge that separates the extended part of the wave function to the localized part of the wave function? Because as you go through the transition between one or the other, it's essentially a phase transition, you are expecting to see some form of wave function which is intermediate between extended and localized. And such intermediate state is called multifractal. So while an extended system, extended wave function, has more or less the same amplitude all over every lattice sites, while a localized wave function instead has support only a limited set of the lattice point, a multifractal wave function has support on a large fraction of the system size, but with widely fluctuating amplitudes. And the reason for which it's called multifractal is because if you draw the modulus square of the wave function and then you find the curve which is drawn at a given height, so you pierce the modulus square of the wave function with some plane at a given height, the curve which is drawn is a fractal, whose fractal dimension depends on the height at which you place this plane. So you have a different
W bigger than WC, right?
No, this is typically for W big smaller than WC, or at the critical point. So I'm looking at the statistics of the wave function close to this mobility edge, where you go from the extended to the localized, and at the critical value, the mobility edge is at zero energy, and so it is at the Fermi point, essentially. So at each height, you draw a different curve with different fractal dimension, and this is why this is called a multifractal, because the fractal dimension depends on the height. And so you have a fractal dimension which depends on the plane at which you pierce it. And the behavior of this multifractal is actually still an open problem, more than 50 years after its introduction by Anderson. And its behavior is only known in the so-called perturbative regimes, so namely when the fractal is very dense, so the fractal dimension is almost the dimension of the physical space, or where the fractal is very sparse, so that the dimension goes tends to zero, which physically corresponds to the Anderson model in 2 plus epsilon dimension or in infinite number of dimension. And this is the holy grail of what I would like to study, even if I'm not there yet, but I have an interesting idea on how to go about it. But so the motivating question for this work is that, as I hope I made it clear, the question of whether a wave function is localized or extended clearly depends on the representation that you take for the wave function and or the operators that you choose, namely the fact that we are looking at it in the coordinate representation. However, I think all the physicists here know that a very useful tool to discriminate an insulator from a conductor is to look at the level spacing statistics, so the statistics of the distance between nearest neighbor energy of your Hamiltonian. If the level statistics follows a Poisson low, most likely you're dealing with a system which is localized or that has a large number of local integral motions which constrains its dynamics. While if the statistics of the level spacing follows the famous Vigna-Dyson universality, then with high probability you're looking at a system in the extended states. This is an empirical law which is understood in a qualitative way, in a physicist way, but it is realized by all systems, all natural systems that it has been checked for. So this property hints that possibly localization or not is a basis independent property, because the statistics of the eigenvalue does not depend on the basis in which you're looking at, and therefore that there might be a way to formulate the problem of localization in a basis independent way. And to test this, of course, random matrix theory is the ideal settings. However, historically, the eigenstate of random matrix theory have not been looked into much detail, so we don't have a very good analytical tools to study it. So we need to develop some new machinery to try to understand why this common expectation of the relation between eigenvalue and eigenvector statistics emerges in condensed matter, and how can we capture it in random matrix theory. And along the way, beside developing some interesting mathematical structure, we probably learn something more about insulators from a condensed matter point of view. Am I going too fast, or you have some questions? So this is what leads me to the idea of this spontaneous symmetry breaking. So we consider a random matrix model where the matrix is taken to be Hermitian, because from a physicist point of view, I like to consider it as the Hamiltonian of my system, and the weight will be purely real. So the approach that I take from a physics point of view is that I'm just taking the matrix representation of the Hamiltonian operator, and each entries are sampled from the distribution given by the weight, so that in principle each degrees of freedom interact with every other degrees of freedom, and I don't have any preconceived notion of locality. For a physically relevant Hamiltonian, the matrix instead will be sparse, because only nearest neighbor or short range degrees of freedom will be coupled. And the common wisdom is that such a model describes delocalized systems, of course. And I'm sure that all of you know this, but let me go through it quickly. If you further assume that the action is invariant under rotation, so it's the trace of some potential, then you can switch to the eigenvalue eigenvector representation, and this means that your partition function factorizes between a part that depends only on the eigenvalue and the part that depends on the unitary matrix encoding the eigenvectors. As we know, the price of this decomposition is the introduction of the van der Mond determinant from the Jacobian, and this expression is interpreted to mean that the eigenvectors uniformly distribute over the unit sphere of the UN group, and most of all that the eigenvectors are distribution is independent from the weight, from the potential that you have chosen. So that if you take a random unitary matrix from the R measure, this is essentially featureless, and if each entry of this matrix follows the Porter-Thomas distribution, which means that each entry scales like 1 over n with variance which also scales like 1 over n. On the other side, if you look at the eigenvalues, you have a very convenient picture coming from the Coulomb gas potential. You can interpret the eigenvalues as particles living in one dimension, confined by the potential and interacting with one another because of the Jacobian in a logarithmic way, and so you can understand, you can calculate all observable related to the eigenvalues by solving the equilibrium distribution of this Coulomb gas subjected to these two effects and the additional observable that you want. And the universality comes about, for instance, by looking at the level spacing distribution that I mentioned before, so that these sort of models always is distributed in a Wigner-Dyson way for any potential in a polynomial relation. So physically, this has been interpreted through the idea that the Jacobian interprets the fact that the eigenvalues interact with one another through their eigenvectors, and therefore that you have level repulsion because the all eigenvalues have their eigenvectors with a non-zero overlap, and therefore they will tend to repel one another. And so this supports the claim that when you have Wigner-Dyson eigenvalue distribution, you also have extended eigenvectors. If then you want to consider some localization problem, then you have to break rotational invariance, for instance, using the so-called random banded matrices, which is one of the simplest way of doing it. So you take, you sample your matrix M entries independently from a Gaussian, but the width of the Gaussian decays away from the diagonal. And if this decay is fast enough, then the typical eigenvectors of this matrix will be localized, and in turns you will find Poisson statistics for the eigenvalues. While if you tune this decay just right, then you'll find that the eigenvectors are typically multifractal and the eigenvalue statistics is critical. So this again supports that even in a generic random matrix settings, there is this connection between eigenvalue and eigenvector statistics. And that in particular that these ensembles, the critical random banded matrix, does reproduce correctly what happens at the, based on, at the mobility edge of the Anderson model. But by explicitly breaking rotational invariance, you limit yourself to the tools that you have at your disposal. So you lose all the orthogonal polynomial techniques, all the Coulomb gas problem, all the loop equations, and for you have to invent some other tools which come in the form of supersymmetry or some cluster expansion which allow you to give to reach some results, but they are in a sense perturbative and therefore again limited to the two perturbative regimes that I mentioned before, and most of all, you cannot get with these analytical tools to the physically relevant regime of the three-dimensional Anderson model. So the invariant models are endowed, we know, with superior non-perturbative techniques. So the question is, can there be a spontaneous symmetry breaking in an invariant model such that it reproduces non-trivial eigenvector statistics of non-invariant models? So can we make a model which spontaneously breaks rotational invariance in the way that we explicitly did in the models that I introduced before, so that we can use the machinery that we have developed for matrix models for years to study observables related to the eigenvectors? Initially think that this contradicts the argument that I showed you before between of the factorization of the eigenvectors from the eigenvalue, then I like you to keep in mind the example of a ferromagnet. In a ferromagnet, you have no preconceived notion of the direction in which the magnetization will look. Your partition function is completely invariant under rotation, and therefore by phase look you would expect no spontaneous magnetization to exist. But if you introduce a spontaneous a symmetry breaking term, so if you introduce some explicit reference to a basis, then what you will see is that the system has a resistance against moving away from a given orientation that it took. So you to understand if a model can or not break the symmetry, you need to have a way to nudge it in a way to break it. Then you take the thermodynamic limit, and then you see if the system has memory of this nudge or not. And the simplest way to understand this mechanism comes from the multicut solution of matrix models. So we'll consider a matrix model with a potential with several well-separated minima, such that the equilibrium distribution of the eigenvalues is made out of disconnected patches that are called multicuts, as you know. And the prototypical example that I will use is the one of the symmetric double well potential. So a word of caution, if you're not completely familiar with a random matrix model, is that here the phase transition happens when the parameter t is greater than 2. So if in a normal quantum mechanical problem, the phase transition happens when t goes from negative to positive, so when you go from having a single minima to having two minima. Here instead, you also have to have the two minima to be deep enough and separated enough so that the distribution of eigenvalues does not overflow over the maximum. So I will consider always the case t greater than 2. And in this case, the distribution of eigenvalues is a two-cut. The equilibrium is a two-cut solution. So why is there a symmetry, spontaneous symmetry breaking? Well, there is a simple, naive argument to introduce you to this idea that comes from looking at the line element of the Hermitian matrix. So in matrix element space, the line element is flat, while in eigenvalue, eigenvector representation, the eigenvalues part is still flat, but the eigenvectors live on spheres whose radii are proportional to the distance between their respective eigenvalues. So if I'm looking at just two eigenvalues and there are two eigenvectors, they span a plane. And if I perturb the matrix models, the two vectors will rotate in their plane, and the angle of rotation is this quantity here. So the statement here is that if the distance between the eigenvalues is small, then a rotation will also create a small line element, which means that in the energy landscape configuration, I also will move off a little quantity, which means that if I'm not fine-tuning this rotation in matrix element space, and therefore I'm not exactly moving on this circle, but I'm moving in a neighbor, I'm still making a small mistake, a small change in the eigenvalues. And therefore, I'm still close to the basin of equilibrium. This is just a cartoon, and it does not have any meaning, any connection with the models I'm considering. Because this will typically be a multidimensional system, and therefore, I don't know how to picture it. So it is just a cartoon to give a vague idea, and I'll try to make it clearer as I go. If instead the distance between the eigenvalues is large, then it means that even a small angle of rotation will take me very distant, very far away from the original point, which means that if I'm making a mistake and I'm not fine-tuning exactly this change, then I will, in general, make a large displacement of the eigenvalues as well, and therefore I will pay a big price. So essentially, the point is that the origin of this symmetry breaking, the spontaneous symmetry breaking, is dual to the point of the level repulsion. If you want to make a generic matrix, if you want to create a degeneracy in a generic Hermitian matrix, you have to fine-tune three parameters. And the reason for which, in general, level repel one another is because it is hard entropically to generate such a coincidence of three points. Here is the same. If I want to move in between two points where only the eigenvalues, only the eigenvectors have moved, but not the eigenvalues, then I also have to fine-tune three parameters over a large distance, which will be a very rare occurrence. And this is why the multicut case is the ideal to test this idea, because in general we have two length scales. One is the length scale of the nearest neighbor spacing between eigenvalues, which scales like 1 over n, so eigenvalues are typically packed. But the supported distribution instead spans a distance of order of unity. And therefore, if you have multicut solution, it means that you have patches of eigenvalues which are distant of order of unity, which is a large distance in these settings, which means that eigenvectors of eigenvalues belonging to different cuts will not mix, that the rotation that will hybridize eigenvectors from eigenvalues in different cuts will not occur because of this fine-tuning principle. Another way to understand it is to think how you would generate a random matrix model from scratch. So normally we can start from a Gaussian model. In this case, it's very simple because you just sample each entry of the matrix independent from the Gaussian, and you immediately have the correlated distribution of eigenvalues. If you still work on a one-cut model in which you add additional correlation in the matrix, you can generate this matrix as a perturbation in a metropoly scheme. But if instead you are going to a multicut solution, then, well, the Gaussian model will be unstable. And the statement is that you will start with an initial seed. And let me take the example of the double well potential. This initial seed will typically have half of the eigenvalues positive and half of the eigenvalues negative, and therefore will be, as part of the Hilbert space, half of the Hilbert space spanned by the eigenvectors belonging to the positive eigenvalues and the complement spanned by the others. And then you will evolve with the metropolis scheme by jumping in different points. And when you will reach the equilibrium distribution, with high probability, the eigenvalues in the negative well, the eigenvectors of the eigenvalues in the negative well, will span the same part of the Hilbert space that was spanned originally by the eigenvectors of your original seed. So the spontaneous symmetry making means that the final configuration that you reach in a metropolis approach will have a strong memory of the initial seed, something that instead will not be the case in a one-cut model or in the Gaussian one.
Can you be more precise about the metropolis scheme that you use to simulate the animation?
So this metropolis scheme will be very costly in general because it will scale like n squared. But yeah, so you just jump from one point like you do normally in a metropolis scheme. You just generate, you start from your initial point, you add some random steps to your matrix, your entry, you calculate the free energy that you get, and then you accept it or reject it according to the usual rules, and then you go on like that until you reach a reasonable equilibrium. And the statement
for a finite matrix, you can always jump from. This is true. The statement that the eigenvectors which are positive remain positive is true only.
The statement is that that it will be very hard for you, very improbable for you in the thermodynamic limit, to make a jump on a configuration of space in which your eigenvalues will be such that you are favored compared to your initial point, while the eigenvectors will be rotated. That will be very improbable, and more improbable as you increase the system size. So the statement is that if you have a multicut matrix model with n cuts and nj eigenvalues in each cut, then the UN symmetry will break into the product of the of the individual number of eigenvalues in each cut. So namely, for the double well case, you will have that the UN will be broken into a UN half cross UN half. That means that when you generate a matrix, will be half of the eigenvalues, which will be negative. The eigenvectors of these eigenvalues will span half of the Hilbert space, and that part will remain invariant under perturbation, but you have a hard time in rotating your Hilbert space in a way to hybridize these two separate halves. And there are three ways to go about it. One is a Brownian motion, which is the dual of geometrical argument that I gave, and I'm not going to talk more about it. Then there is a numerical finite size analysis that I will show, but first I'd like to show you the analytical calculation. So, as I mentioned before, what you want to do is to introduce a symmetry breaking term, which introduces a preferred basis. And the most natural one, I think, will be the trace of the commutator between my matrix and a given Hermitian matrix S squared, so that the eigenvectors of the matrix S will provide the preferred basis. Unfortunately, this, as it is, it's too hard to handle. I don't know how to do the analytical calculation, so I had to invent something which instead I know how to do, and so I introduce this object here. So I factorize both the source matrix S and my matrix in terms of the eigenvectors and eigenvalue, and then I take the difference between the product of the diagonal part minus the product of the two matrices themselves. So it is clear that if the eigenvectors of both matrices align, this quantity vanishes, while if they do not align, then this will be finite. And then I place an absolute value to ensure that this quantity is penalized, but then it can be checked that if I sort the eigenvalues in increasing order, this quantity is always non-negative, and therefore I can remove and forget about the eigenvalues as long as I work in a simplex, which is what we usually do.
This model, you know, trace of commutator M S squared, so that's the original Moshe-Neuberger.
Not really. The Moshe-Neuberger Shapiro was here. It was trace of M U M U dagger, and which is similar and allows you to do the calculation. So the problem is that this will be quartic in the unitary matrix, well, this is quadratic, and I don't know how to massage this in what I need to prove the spontaneous symmetry breaking. And so in particular, and then for the double well case, since the symmetry should be broken in U and half cross U and half, then I'll take the matrix S to have two sets of N half degenerate eigenvalues, so that to induce the correct symmetry breaking, so that I penalize the rotation in the between sectors between different eigenvalues of the external matrix, but I leave all the internal rotation free. And then I can do work out this partition function using the Itzigan-Zuber formula, which has to be regularized. And so the bottom line is that I can use
by regularized, you mean to take into account the absolute value, or
no? By regularized means that the Itzigan-Zuber formula assumes that the eigenvalues are non-degenerate. If it is degenerate, it becomes an expression 0/0, and therefore it has to be regularized for this 0/0 term, which produces that it is a sum over the way that you partition the eigenvalues in between the different sets. And the absolute value, I leave it here to remind me that I'm working in a simplex, but it is inconsequential. It is effectively not there. And therefore, by taking the derivative of this partition function with respect to the coupling, I'm calculating the expectation value of this operator, which is a disorder operator, a disorder parameter, because it vanishes when the symmetry is broken, because it means that the eigenvectors of the two matrix have been locked between one another, while if it is non-zero, it means that the symmetry has been restored. And the calculation correctly showed that if I first take the thermodynamic limit and then I set the source to zero, the disorder parameter vanishes, meaning that the symmetry has been broken, while at finite n, the disorder parameter is non-zero. And moreover, you can see that this comes about because the non-zero part comes from contributions that contain factors of this type, which have a natural interpretation in terms of instanton. So these are essentially instanton of two eigenvalues switching between the wells. And if you take first the thermodynamic limit, you make this instanton infinitely massive, and therefore you kill the symmetries. If you first take the limit j going to 0 instead, you make the instanton massless, and therefore you restore the symmetry. And it is important that the eigenvalues belong to different cuts, because it assures that this distance always stays of the order of unity, and therefore it cannot compete with the thermodynamic limit. So everything works exactly as you would expect from a spontaneous symmetry breaking. And so this is the analytic calculation. It is also nice to have a finite way, a finite size way to understand this symmetry breaking term. And a way that I found is, again, taking the double well example to generate a representative matrix. And in this case, I cheat. I just solve the Coulomb gas problem to find the equilibrium distribution of eigenvalues, and then I multiply it by a generic unitary matrix. And then I apply a perturbation to this matrix in the form of a sparse Gaussian matrix. And by sparse, I mean that it has order of n non-zero elements. So not order of 1, which will be too weak of a perturbation, not order of n squared, which instead will be as strong as original matrix. And then I find the eigenvectors of the perturbed matrix, and I found how much the eigenvectors have rotated because of this perturbation, and this is the typical results. So you see that the unitary matrix that performs the rotation has acquired this block structure in which the off-diagonal blocks are suppressed by a power of n compared to the diagonal one, indicating that the un symmetry has been broken into a un half. And you can do all sort of analysis on the size of the elements for the diagonal and off-diagonal elements. Is important to see that the diagonal blocks are virtually perfectly ergodic, because the red line would correspond to a Porter-Thomas distribution for half of the Hilbert space, and it fits very well, while the off-diagonals also fit a Porter-Thomas distribution, but with a width which is suppressed by a power of n. That is because essentially Porter-Thomas is just a way of a limit, a central limit theorem. It's not really related to random matrices in any deep way. And you can do finite size analysis to see that everything follows expectation, and therefore that at finite size you see that the off-diagonal elements and the off-diagonal overlaps to be suppressed as a power of n. So this
is a question.
Yes.
So the idea of introducing these double well potential is to basically make it so that the eigenvectors are supported on one or the other set.
Exactly.
But in terms of kind of the measures that you were talking about of localization with eigenvalue spacings, you still have random matrix eigenvalue spacings in the double well potential case, right?
Within each block, yes. Each block, you still have ergodicity. You still have the eigenvectors are extended within the part of the Hilbert space spanned by the neighbors.
So are you trying to induce localization through this action, or
depending on what you mean. If you mean localization this is what I was about to say here. If you mean localization in the sense of Anderson model, this is not localization, because you still have a large fraction of eigenvectors with a finite overlap between them. But it is a lack of ergodicity, because once you have generated a given matrix, then the eigenvectors will not be able to rotate by any natural perturbation in certain directions. Will only be limited in moving in part of the Hilbert space, but not in the whole Hilbert space.
By ergodicity, you mean with respect to some metropolis dynamic?
No, but I mean ergodicity meaning that you can explore the whole Hilbert space. I mean that I can define some operators that will always have zero expectation value with respect to these eigenvectors by applying arbitrarily, reasonable perturbations to it. So it is ergodicity breaking, I think, in any. It's not localization, it is correct, but it's definitely ergodicity breaking. And I think that this might also be relevant. So this, first of all, is a proof of principle that, in fact, the eigenvector distribution is linked to the eigenvalue distribution, which is something that we have not normally considered. And also, I think that this can be relevant in the context of many-body localization, because in many-body localization, compared to the Anderson localization, you're actually looking for a localization in the Hilbert space, in the Fock space, to be more precise. So to have a tool which does not rely exactly on your understanding of the model in coordinate space, but allows you to have a more generic approach, I think is good in that direction, even though this is still a very early claim. And
just if you can go back to the one slide before. So this, when you showed the this one. So this spacing distribution in each cut still does unidirectional statistics, right, or not?
Yeah, because the level of correlation within each cut is Wigner-Dyson, but between different cuts instead, it's not Wigner-Dyson anymore.
I see. But what do you get for that between different cuts?
Oh, that I don't remember. I don't think that is even universal. You get it depending. You have to solve the orthogonal polynomials with the given potential, and then you can calculate the correlation and. I don't think that is even universal. It's just a fact. But the claim is that if you don't have Wigner-Dyson, then you can have localization between those eigenvectors.
I think they're effectively independent.
I think that they are exponentially suppressed, so which is the same.
It goes back to your question. I mean, I thought you were trying to sort of find ways to, you know, get the Poisson statistics from this. Right?
So I'm getting to that. So this is the point of principle that, in fact, you can have non-trivial eigenvector statistics. Now, this is where things become even more interesting, in my opinion. So now I'm going to turn into these ensembles, which belong to the family that Mutalib, Chen and Ismail introduced in 93, and then have been worked out in different contexts, that have a potential which is not polynomial. And therefore, instead of being in the class of models that originate from a Gaussian, they originate from a log normal. And the soft confinement potential sets these models apart from the usual one, so that they don't belong to the to universality class of Wigner-Dyson. And I mean, in a way, it is because the log normal weight has an indeterminate moment problem, so you don't have a one-to-one correspondence between the potential you take and the orthogonal polynomials that you take. Nonetheless, they can be solved through Q-deform orthogonal polynomials, and this was actually the original motivation for introducing them, to have fun with Q-deform polynomials, but they turn out to be more interesting than that. And another interesting aspect is that these matrix models have attracted a lot of attention from the string theory community, because they arise as the localization limit, which has nothing to do with Anderson localization, it's a different type of localization, of topological models like Chern-Simon and ABJM, in which, however, the coupling kappa here is imaginary. But I like to stick to real ones, but this is not a severe limitation. Also, you might have encountered this type of partition function or object in other contexts. I think that this is a wonderland of models. They have quite interesting connection with six vertex model, Pan-Levé, and other forms of integrability. The partition function is also the probability of survival of vicious random walker, and as I mentioned, they appear in different form of topological quantum field theory and string theory. But the connection that is interesting to me is the one with the metal insulator transition, and then the ABJ model, and I'm going to make a case that there is some glassiness going on with this model. So what is known is through cured the form orthogonal polynomials is that the level spacing distribution of these models is in the intermediate between Wigner-Dyson and Poisson. So namely, if you start with a very large kappa, you make the potential very strong. So it behaves almost as a polynomial one, and the level spacing statistics becomes essentially the GUE one from the Wigner-Dyson. And as you take kappa from zero and you make it larger, then the level spacing distribution moves, and at infinity, it approaches almost the Poisson distribution. Moreover, it was shown in a series of work that the level space, the eigenvalue correlation function of these models match very well those of the critical random banded model that I showed you before, the one that was already known to describe the metal insulator transition. And so there was this conjecture some 20 years ago that maybe this model spontaneously break rotational invariance in a way to realize the critical random banded model. So on one side, we have this invariant model with log normal confinement. On the other side, we have this random banded model with critical decay of the width of the Gaussian. So this model has been shown, to be a good toy model to describe the Anderson transition, where the decay strength of these of the variance is linked with the dimensionality of the Anderson model. So the statement is that there should be some relation between B on one side, kappa, and the other side, and the connectivity of the Anderson model, so that by varying kappa, I capture a different universality of the Anderson model at different dimension. And the step forward that I made is a rather trivial observation, but I think that is gravid of consequences. So let me just take, for simplicity, the case in which the ensemble is exactly log normal, and so it is a Laguerre ensemble with just positive eigenvalues, and I'll make the exponential mapping. Then this model, so I, instead of taking the van der Mond determinant to the exponential and considering it as some interaction between the eigenvalues, I'll just take each term of the van der Mond determinant as a part of the way of the partition function, and just notice that combined with the quadratic potential, each term in the van der Mond displaces the equilibrium position of each eigenvalue to a different point. So the statement is that I can expand the van der Mond determinant of this partition function, and each term of this expansion would correspond to having a different equilibrium distribution for each eigenvalues, which means that I have a large number of saddle points of this partition function. I can do this calculation exactly because all the integrals are Gaussians and independently, and the combinatorics turns out to be rather simple. And I found that this interpretation actually matches the exact calculation done using Q deform orthogonal polynomial. So you see that each term of the expansion corresponds to one of the terms of this of the expansion of this MacMahon function. And so each term, each saddle point comes with the same leading free energy. And the only difference is in the power of Q coming from the expansion of this term, which therefore has a natural interpretation as the fugacity of the instanton. And then it is obvious that the number of saddles that you get by expanding this quantity are in one-to-one correspondence with the way that you can break UN symmetry into its U2 component. And moreover, there was a work by Bogomolnyi in 97 which showed that if you take the kappa to infinity limit, the Q parameter goes to zero, so only one saddle survives. And that was shown by one of his students or postdoc, I don't know, Pato, to correspond to a breaking of the UN symmetry to a U1 to the N. So I remind you that the kappa to infinity limit is the one that generates the Poisson statistics for the eigenvalues. And and it was shown that this corresponds to a breaking of U1 symmetry into U1 to the n. So this is consistent. You completely localized the system, the wave function are localized, and the eigenvalues follow Poisson statistics.
Could you explain, you know, so the McMahon formula comes up when you look at Q-weighted partitions, you know,
okay.
You look at the partition function of that, so you sum over that. So is that how it comes up here for you, or it's a different?
No, for me, it just comes from expanding the van der Mond determinant, grouping the exponential together with the parabolic part to make a parabola which is shifted, calculating the Gaussian integral and collecting all the factors that come about, and then you can see that they resum exactly to this McMahon function. It's a much more lowbrow approach, much less elegant, but so which means that each saddle corresponds to one of these. Term. And then you can see that each of these come from one component of the van der Mond. And if you remember, and if you think that the van der Mond corresponds to one part of the U2, this is where this last came come about. And so here it was shown that in the kappa to infinity limit, which corresponds to the Poisson limit, only one saddle survives, and that corresponds to breaking UN to the U1. At finite k, you have all the others, and therefore there is a natural interpretation that at finite k, you have the fugacity of the instanton, which corresponds to restoring one of the broken symmetry, one of the U2 component of the broken symmetry, and so each of these saddle point corresponds to a partial restoration of the full symmetry. And this makes sense if this has to reproduce what happened at the Anderson metal insulator transition, because that would be a critical system. So you don't expect a particular symmetry breaking to emerge because it should be structureless as a critical state. You expect that the breaking of UN symmetry appears in all the possible weight with different weights so that the effective distribution comes from an interplay between the fugacity or the probability of each configuration and the entropic probability of generating it.
Is there a critical value of kappas in
that? No, all kappas are critical. They correspond to different dimensionality, and therefore they go from essentially from infinite dimensional Anderson model, which that has essentially no localization, to the two-dimensional Anderson model, which instead is completely localized, and then interpolates from delocalized to localized in all the in the different ways. And here, with this conjecture, I played around by generating the unitary matrix, which should have this form. And I found that, in fact, the eigenvectors that I get scales with a fractional power, so they have this multifractal structure, which you see here, compared to the R measure here. Unfortunately, I know that I'm not doing it correctly because I don't know how to sample unitary matrix uniformly from the R measure in the way that I'm doing it, and hopefully somebody here can help me, but I'm afraid that is a complicated problem, and therefore I'm not getting the right powers that I should, but nonetheless the results are quite supported, because from the perturbative Suzy calculation, I expect to see for the second inverse participation ratio something like 0.9, and instead I get 0.92 from my numerical analysis. For the 3D Anderson model, I expect something, I don't remember, like 0.48, and I get 0.5. So I get the right qualitative behavior, but I'm not getting the right one because I don't know how to sample uniformly the HAAR measure. In my way.
The question is how to sample a uniform measure on unitary group? Or
unitary group starting from the generators of the unitary group. Because I know how to do it for the group itself, but I want to have a mapping from the generator to know what is the measure on the generators, which uniformly generates the R measure. And what I think it is a very correlated measure, and therefore there is no a priori way to sample the generators to have the Haar measure. Mm-hmm. But maybe there is some, at least numerical trick to do it. And I'm happy to discuss it if somebody wants to approach me. And also, from this conjecture matrix, I can reconstruct the Hermitian matrix and see that it actually behaves like the critical random banded matrix, showing that once I factor out a global rotation, what the dynamical degrees of freedom that are left corresponds to the explicitly broken case. So this is more or less where I am now. So I hope I convinced you that, in fact, the eigenvector distribution can have interesting information, which depends on the model that you're studying, on the eigenvalue statistics, and therefore that when you have some deviation from the Wigner-Dyson, most likely there is also some deviation from the Porter-Thomas distribution. And also, I hope that I convince you that this weakly confined matrix model of the Mutalib ensembles has some complex energy landscape. And most of you probably at this point are thinking complex energy landscape, glassiness. And I think that this is actually the interesting direction that this is taking. I think there is a very good reason for this. Namely, when you do a replica approach for a complex system, what are you looking at? Are you looking at the overlaps between the eigenstates? And if I want to understand whether a model has localized or not, it's really hard to construct observables which are related to the eigenvectors of a given realization, because the eigenvectors are by definition orthogonal. But if I generate two realizations of the same model under slightly different disorder, then I can construct the overlap between the eigenvectors of the two models and see what is the structure of this overlap. If the models is completely, if the models are completely delocalized, then all overlaps will look the same, because there will not be any particular direction, and therefore you'll have only one type of overlap, so no replica symmetry breaking. But if instead there is some localization, then different eigenvectors will have different overlaps in different realization, and therefore your overlap matrix will acquire a structure, and therefore this spontaneous symmetry breaking or rotational symmetry is most very likely related to some form of replica symmetry breaking. And therefore, the critical landscape that I get for the weakly confined matrix model related to the Anderson metal insulator transition most likely is related to a full replica symmetry breaking. I think that this is the right framework to understand it. But this is all work in progress, and I welcome suggestions and comments. And with that, I thank you for your attention.
Questions?
So in this last case, this Mutalib log square potential, right? So you looked at only the Hermitian case, we take into two, basically.
Yes.
Can you do it the same thing for orthogonal case also?
Oh, I don't remember. I think it can be done, but I don't remember if there are some technicalities that makes it hard. I mean, the technique here is the Q-deform polynomial, so I suppose that there is no problem in considering different beta. Yeah, I haven't looked in that particular direction yet.
Fabio, then.